Avalanche danger is all around the village, but just closing up the skeins is not enough. If people are out wandering around just for fun, they got to be aware that if they leave these big trees, they're at the bottom of these chutes. Here's the other side of the village, and this is the chute we're talking about. As you look at this, you can tell that this chute runs at least once a year, maybe more often, and normally it accumulates down in here. You can see that there are plants growing up in here, so this does not run as often, but it has run through here. It's taken a garage out. I think that was in 1950 when they had all the snow. The wives' tale, or the legend goes that when the miners were here and they had kids that would walk this road to go to school in Holden Village, that they had a road crossing guard and stop sign to stop the avalanches. Yes. The village was very well placed. These trees are 200-300 years old. If you have trees that are 80 years old, that's not such a good thing, because there's something called a 100-year slide, and it can take trees that size out. Once more time, that's the slide on the other side of the village. So. There are other problems around the village, with steep slopes. The most obvious one are the ones related to the tailings. And it gives you a little better idea looking from the side how steep it is. That's a very good angle for avalanches. They can range anywhere from 20 degrees, 25 degrees to 55 degrees, more commonly 25 to 45, somewhere in that area. And that slope right there is falls in that very probable range, a very common range for something to avalanche. This is the Holden Lake Trail. This avalanches very frequently. You can see there's nothing growing there at all. It's just a low line of vegetation. And that's indicative that the snow falls more than once during the winter up there. As you look down into the valley, we're looking at the trail. You know, that valley bottom is where the trail is. You can see the difference in vegetation. This is all willow trees, or we call them brush, but they're 20 feet tall down there. You're probably familiar with that as you walk through the trail. This is what they call a climax avalanche, where the avalanche runs its full potential, its full physical limits, and it runs all the way down and out into the flats. And the trail comes right through here. But because there's more vegetation there, it tells you that that thing doesn't run but once, maybe in 100 years, or maybe once in 50 years, who knows. But you can go out there and age the vegetation if you want to find out. It can take pretty large trees. This is on the Holden Lake Trail. As you're hiking in the summer, you may know the spot where all the trees are cut. These trees are, guessing from the diameter, they look 60, 80 years old. But again, we're talking about a slide that may come once in 100 years, so this tree can grow up. So a small tree doesn't necessarily mean you're safe. You've got to look for the big ones.
I was amazed to learn that yesterday the tree that came down the trail came down just from the snow weight.
Mm-hmm. If you have some problems with roots, like root rot, some extra weight, we'll just take the tree right over. I don't know, how many people have hiked the Holden Lake Trail and know the spot I'm talking about? You know how much wood's in there. It took three or four different trips with the help of Mavericks to log that out by hand. So you gotta be tough. And it's a lot of hard work. Another problem we face, and this is a little more difficult to deal with, is the road. The snow cats cross underneath some bad slopes. And this is a more potential problem, really, than the skiing, because you can't close the road when you need groceries. Okay. Why don't you just yell out as we go from these particular slides? I want your opinion. Is it, if, the scene you're seeing is safe or it's dangerous. Just go ahead and let me hear what you think. Is this a dangerous place to be or not? I hope not. That's the Miner's Village. It's a safe place.
Do avalanches come down through there, though?
No.
No.
The only way you can tell that, you say, well, why is this open? The only way you can tell that is to go up on the upper mine level, look across, and see where the chutes come down. The Miner's Village and Holden Village were the people who placed them knew what they were doing. And they're protected by very large trees that have been around for hundreds of years. What about here? Do you want to be out there in that spot in that snowstorm? That's very similar to what we're experiencing right now. To tell you where this is you go behind, off the upper level, where the water tank is. There are two roads. They're covered with alders. This is the upper one. It's very steep. It's a very good place to go skiing, if you like hills. But what do you think? Is this safe or not? I don't hear anything.
The diversion dam road?
Yeah, upper diversion dam road. There's two diversion dams.
There's lots of trees around.
Lots of trees. Very safe. These trees are very big trees. These are not avalanche chutes. This is a safe place to be. And even in this kind of weather, if you're looking for a place to go learn how to tell a mark turn, that's steep enough in the power. What do you think? Not a good spot. One other danger, maybe you talk about it as a community that's not related to avalanche, but a winter danger in this spot is with all that mine debris, those structures up there, the snow will drift over and make it look like, it look like a nice surface, and actually it's a hole. So if you go up in the upper mine level, stay on the road. Don't go wandering around. You might fall in through something. What?
Snowstorm.
Okay, what about this place right here? Very good. Very bad?
Very bad.
Down the road?
This is really not here. I'm cheating here. This is a Stehekin. But this is a good spot. No. It's a very bad spot, especially if you're standing there taking a picture and not looking up. What you have is you see the ice over here, the blue ice. This snow will fall off this very easily if you get hit, even though these things are very small gullies. They're not very big. If it hits you, carries you, and it would very likely cross this road and dump you in the Stehekin River. This is what's called the terrain trap. This is very bad. However, the reason why that is Diane, and I'm standing in the same situation taking a picture looking back at her, but the reason why she's there right now, there's no problem, is the snow is stable, everything that's run has run, and you can get away with that. We were up there, and we were staying in the cabin at Bridge Creek, it started to snow. What do you do? Knowing that that is the way home. Well, what do you do with that situation?
Stay a couple days, do that.
You got three choices. Heard Mary Beth say, go home as soon as you can. Heard stay a couple days till it settles. Any other choices?
Go early or go late or go one at a time and watch the person at the place the most danger.
That's the only route.
No, that was the other option. I see. Is there another way? Is there another way out? There was another route out. We had those choices. And the last choice would be yours. Going through there anyway and watching, because if you get dumped into a river, you've got a very serious problem. We got out of there. We cut our trip short. As soon as we saw it was snowing, we did that. Because of that spot. Now, it's not just that one little spot. There's several miles of this stuff. So
that's basically what we have on the road.
Yeah, it's not quite that bad, but it's the same sort of situation. And it poses a problem because it's your lifeline. Something that's very difficult to deal with. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what's involved in going up the trail to the trail junction and to the beaver ponds. Let me focus this a little bit. Okay, the first thing you encounter Again, this is that same sheep that we were talking about before, right here. Actually, this is probably the worst spot that I know of between here and the trail junction, and it happens to be right outside the village. But the catch to this spot is that it's down here in the 150-year slide zone. Okay, I want to draw your attention a little bit away from the slides. And over here, to this drawing, a little bit of quick nomenclature about an avalanche path. There are what's called starting zones. In other words, these are the places where an avalanche can start. That can be because it's really steep or it's convex, but it's got a lot of snow, and this is where it starts. Most people who are burying avalanches when they're skiing are skiing in the starting zones. Okay. Most of the trails around here that we talk about that are safe to ski are down here in the runout zone. And then you have the track that the avalanche runs. Okay. Is that clear? Any questions about that? Most of our trails, for example, the danger that we see in this slide to the road there is the runout zone. And it's only dangerous if you get caught when that avalanche falls. It's triggered by natural causes. You're not going to trigger that avalanche yourself. That's the key. So if you avoid avalanche periods, it's a safe place to ski. You really don't have to worry about trying to figure out the snow because you're not in the starting zones and you're not going to trigger it. Nature's going to trigger it on its own.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
This is sort of a different place, but John the Deere is driving down the road to the lake. They're driving through deposition zone, right? Not
right.
Starting zone.
Right.
So the John the Deere sound is not going to start an avalanche there.
No. The starting zones are up the hill quite a ways. So
they should be safe. The odds of an avalanche hitting the bottom of the deer are pretty minimal.
Minimal.
Right.
It gets more of a concern in the situation that we are in right now. When we have snow falling, we are in an avalanche period. And as long as it's snowing, and for the next 24 hours, the chances of something cutting loose up there are pretty good.
So if we were to run
the
daylight, we'd be running the rest of the
game. Okay, yeah, right. But what you're talking about are the probabilities of something moving here and being caught. But those are the reality. And that's the same with skiing, too. Because you're in deposition zones, as long as you stay in deposition zones, you're safer than in starting zones. But if you get into a situation where you get into a heavy avalanche cycle, like I told you about a few years ago, and we're getting there right now, where we had 8 slides cross the road overnight. And honestly, I feel like we're approaching that. I don't know what to tell you on the road. That's something you're going to have to wrestle with. And you may want to send 2 bombardiers down, keep one out of the avalanche zone, and keep an eye on the one that's going through. Or the other thing to think about, too, is if you get a lot of slides on that road, and you want to open it up, say, for Monday, do you really want to open it up while it's still snowing? I don't know if you want crews in there working while it's still snowing. Because even though one chute, for example, look at the picture here. You see there's 2 chutes. They're not necessarily connected, but a lot of times one chute will join. You'll have 2 branches. One side can run, put your avalanche down, say, on the road. The other branch hasn't run. And let's say you have a crew down there working on it, they can run. If you do have a crew, the absolute minimum, you've got to have somebody who's not digging, whose sole job is they're in a safe place, and they can look, and they can watch that chute to yell to get people out of the way. That's an absolute must. If you're going to dig, and it's still snowing out.
Ken, yes. That did happen. When I was here 10 years ago, we were shoveling an avalanche down on the road, and another one came down while we were shoveling right up above us. The chute happened to be about 50 feet away. It didn't miss us, but it happens.
So these are tough decisions because it involves people coming and going, it involves groceries, it involves a lot of things. And I can't give you flat out answers to the situation. It's a danger, and like I say, I'm getting worried. We're really set up right now. There's nothing to slid either. We've got the whole season's accumulation sitting up on those rocks. Okay, here we are looking again at winter. Skiing the trails. up to the junction. Occasionally we cross a deposition zone. But the other thing we remember is those deposition zones are covered with a lot of vegetation, big vegetation that's been there for years. These are not the annual shoots. These are 100-year slides, 50-year slides. They only run one that distance. They run annually further up the hill where there's no vegetation. For example, right up here, you see there's very little vegetation. As you get down, the vegetation gets more and more and more. It runs up here very frequently, at least every year, at least once, maybe more. Down here, maybe only once in 50 years. So, as long as you're dealing with just a normal avalanche cycle, this is still a safe place to ski. It's only when you get into the exceptional cycle. And the exceptional cycle is obvious, like what we have now. It's just blatant. You can hear things roaring around you. Diane was saying they're out digging this morning, stamping down snow. They've heard several. We heard a couple out there. You've got two snowstorms back to back on top of crust. I mean, that's blatant. What if you continue to have more snow for the next day or two, we're in a bad situation. And that's the one I would, you know, really start considering closing, setting the limits at the village because of the chutes, though, that really cross the road are, and the trail between here and the junction are really 50 to 100-year slide zones. So they're really not that dangerous.
I have a question about your picture.
Yeah.
You've got your first starting zone up there.
Mm-hmm.
If your first avalanche starts up there, is there any chance that there's an all the way down the bottom of that?
Right.
Or you can kind of stop that first one.
You can have it start here, actually leave some deposit here, continue to run, trigger this, and this can run all the way. But the reason I drew this diagram is to illustrate two different slides. You can have a slide up high on a steep slope, or you can have a slide starting here and not even have this slide, too. You can start here. It doesn't have to be start at the top of the mountain. Also, a sense of scale on this. This is drawn in a sense, in the pictures I've shown you, show you a whole mountain, a whole valley. We're dealing with thousands of feet. This can also be a roof. It can be a 40-foot slope. It doesn't have to be a mountainside to kill you. All you have to do is have enough snow falling to knock you over. If you're down on the ground, it only takes inches to bury it. You can't move. And if you don't have somebody watching and knowing you're there, you're dead. So, you gotta look for the, okay, there's the big obvious things that people see, the big gullies, the big traps. But there's the little terrain traps too. And you're really doing an excellent job. Your biggest terrain trap are the roofs. Snow changes from day to day. These are just some filler slides for, I'm going to use these for a program later on. Back to this slide. We've talked about the tailings. We've talked about the mine debris. Okay, here's the slopes we've been talking about. This is a slope that the trail to Holden Lake crosses. What do you think? Okay. That is something that runs every year. Okay, you can start to see the change in vegetation. It runs down here occasionally, but not as often. And down in here, right down here is where the trail is from the junction out to the beaver ponds. What do you think? Dangerous? And a real heavy cycle, yes, and that's about the only time. Okay, going on up lake, or not up lake, excuse me, up valley. If one wants to be crazy enough to want to go to Holden Lake in the winter, you got any guesses as how you do it? There is a safe way to do it, by the way.
Right up the stream.
Close. I heard right up the stream. Anybody else want to take a shot at it? That's very close. It's not the stream. A little tension over here, please. Oh, very bad spot. Well, maybe you can look at it. What you're going to go up is a ridge. Maybe we'll talk about that in a minute. When people can chip in. What you do is you ski out to Holden Creek where the footbridge is, come back just a little bit, and you'll see a ridge that's got timber on it. And you go up that ridge and into the Holden Lake. Forget this trail in the winter. Just forget it. It's not the way to go. Okay, the other problem we have, and I think people in the village are already aware of it, is you can see the vegetation runs out somewhere up here, and this is the bench to Heart Lake. And that's open to the winds that come down the valley here and turn this bend, because there's a big bend in the valley there. It's all rock, so there's very little vegetation that anchors in the snow. You've got big avalanche danger coming off these walls near the deposition zone, but the trick to this spot is that you also have small chutes and things are their own starting zones. So you're crossing small avalanche starting zones in there that dump into Railroad Creek in that water cascade. So you have a terrain trap right here. It's got starting zones, it's got exposure to the predominant winds, so you get wind slabs forming in there. In other words, this is a bad spot. This is questionable. You should be a little more on top of it if anybody goes across that. They should be aware of avalanche stuff. And go through what we call a risk evaluation before you cross that. Really fast now. This is Big Creek. There's no trail into Big Creek. It's full of brush in the summertime, but again, you may recognize that that brush is not very big. It's not over 100 years old. So it's something to be concerned about.
Where's Big Creek?
Big Creek is the next drainage down. We have Copper Creek right here where you get your water out of. The next major drainage is Big Creek. But what's neat about Big Creek is when it snows, all that brush is laying down, it's a good time to go in there, as long as you don't get munched.
Is that between Bubsky and Dumbbell?
Yeah. Okay, what do we see here? This is entering into the cleared the trees, and of course getting across Railroad Creek is the problem. You either start back here at the bridge and traverse the hillside, or you cross the creek, which is dangerous. You need more snow than we got now to do that. But immediately you come out of the trees, and what do you see? What's obvious on the right? It's slick. And see, this is very similar to your what's down there on the road. You've got a bunch of rocks up here that isn't got much ground or trees for the snow to anchor up. It slides off those rocks very easily, and this thing slides. You've got a real possibility, but again, you're in a deposition zone. So as long as you stay away from avalanches, the other thing you have in this situation, you can't see in the picture, there's an avalanche chute on the other side of the valley that goes clear to the top of Copper Creek. So you've got one that's got 4,000 feet of elevation that comes out over here. So you don't want to be here during a snowstorm. But if everything's stable, you can go skiing up there. But then, that's the kind of skiing, you better know what you're doing. You better have a little experience or not played, but certainly read up on avalanches a lot. And be carrying a shovel, be carrying equipment, you have other people with you who know what they're doing. What about here? Safe, not safe? It's safe. You've got lots of trees around, but also notice those bumps. Those are huge rocks. It's a very uneven surface. The snow can't slide. You're protected from things. We're in the center of a big wide valley. It's a safe spot.
Where is that?
This is Big Creek. These next few slides move up Big Creek. And that brave soul in the brown there doing the moguls is Tom Witt. Further up Big Creek. Is it a safe spot? Or not?
It's pretty flat, I guess, what's above it.
Yeah, okay. Where the people are standing, it's very safe. They're away from the sides, when something can fall on. As you look back at the ridge in the background, that's Martin's Ridge. And you can see the top of Martin's Ridge is not the place to be. That's starting zones. These are starting zones. This bowl, this bowl, this bowl. That's where these big ones start. And that's not the thing to ski in. This right here.
That whole Big Creek Valley, at least once you clear the trees, it lays at the base of that big open scree field.
It's in a deposition zone, right?
I mean, it seems to me that there would be nothing on that east face to hold any snow up there.
It's talus, and it's only about this big, and it doesn't take very much snow to override it. And you're very correct.
So if a person was going to go a Big Creek, you'd want at least step in and settle for it.
It'd have to be very stable.
Right.
It's be stable, and you still want experienced people. And you want to carry a snow shovel.
This is still Big Creek.
It's still Big Creek. We're going to go a little further up Big Creek here. After a while, Big Creek turns, and you climb up a steep thing. It's safe to climb because it's full of big trees, and you come into this bowl. What do you think? This is the back side of Seven Finger Jack, and I think Freneau is over off on the left out of the picture. Boy, it looks like a good place to ski. Isn't that a great place to ski, though? Wouldn't you want to go up here and ski? I would. Boy, just delicious. All the carved telemark turns down there? Those are starting zones. But if it's stable, and if you can read snow and make that decision, hey, you can ski it.
but I don't think too many people in the village are capable of doing that right now.
Okay, and also, I want to point out this over here. You know, these are obvious starting zones right here. There's more that, you know, all the vegetation that's there is buried. Anything that's, it's all open slide. You have things up above here that can come down and shoot, trigger bigger things. But let's talk about this. What about this? What do you think? There's vegetation there.
But it's kind of spotty.
Real spotty. That's a bad spot, too. In fact, that's very bad. The angles, look at the rocks underneath. There's, when you have snow on rocks, that slides very easily. This is a very bad spot. You want to stay out. In fact, this is easier to deal with in terms of reading the snow and skiing it and being safe, or being able to find a time when it's safe. This is not always safe, but there might be some time. It could be. This would be much more difficult.
I'm going to get sun during peak hours over there, too.
It may not, yeah. The other thing about Copper Creek is it doesn't get any sun at all. Yeah. Copper Creek is even worse than Big Creek. I don't even think about Copper Creek. It's a death trap. What about this picture? Good spot, bad spot. Tell me where you're at. Here's Heart Lake. You're on your way up to Lyman Lake now. You're going to go up that way for a while. Here are some of the slopes that threaten the business. That trail that goes up to Heart Lake, and then that's some of the problem there. But that would be in the deposition zone of that particular slide when you're up there. But like I say, you're also in starting zones of small slides. Okay, but what about where this skier is at right here? Safe or not safe?
There's small brush.
Right. It's safe. You're both absolutely right. It's safe right now. In the conditions that are in that picture, the snow is not very deep, the brush is up, it's going to hold the snow, but later on when the snow gets deeper, that brush is going to be buried, then that will be a dangerous spot. Well, not dangerous in the sense, it's a runout zone. It's not a starting zone. You won't get brush in a starting zone. Okay, a little further up on the switchbacks, what do you think? Here's Heart Lake again, for reference. Again, this is approaching the top of Crown Point Falls. And the switch and the trail comes up here and then switch back up here and then cross this stuff. What do you think?
Now you're putting yourself in kind of intermittent danger as you cross places that have less vegetation.
Right. These are at, obviously, that's absolutely right. These are things that run. You are in the track of the avalanche. You're not in the deposition zone anymore. That's down here somewhere, out of sight. But you're in the running zone, so you'll be crossing where they run. Not so good. And what you also might find up here is that you might be in a pocket of a small starting zone, you know, a small isolated one. But you're in the tracks of these major ones. Same thing, except up here, now we're talking starting zone. Up here is a starting zone. And down here, look at the... let me check my terminology. Convex shape. That's what you're looking for your starting zone. That's the most dangerous type of shape, and that's your starting zone. What about this? It looks grim, doesn't it? What we're looking at, this is Crown Point Falls right here. This is on the trail. And you've come across those things that we were just looking at. We've crossed this stuff. We've crossed those tracks. And you come to this. This is one of the last things you do before you reach the safety of that bench, right there. And you hit this. What about it? And I'll tell you what's underneath it, dude. It's a granite slab. It's a smooth granite slab. This is the starting zone, and it runs out for several hundred feet below. In other words, this is bad. And what you do here, you either go home, or you dig a quick pit and check the snow, see if it's stable before you cross it. And then you take some precautions that Diane's going to talk about when you do cross it.
Yeah, what's up above there? I mean, if you got a stand of timber.
There's an open stand of timber that is not much better. And we've done that. We've gone up above it. And you expose yourself to a starting zone for longer. It's a bigger bullet, it kind of flares this way. So if you go higher, you expose yourself longer, so it's kind of better just to go lower and get over it quick. This is looking at Cloudy Pass. This is Lyman Lake looking back at Cloudy Pass. If you were going up to Cloudy Pass, the trail leaves through the trees and then crosses this open slope into the pass. Is that a safe route?
Trees, not the open slope.
Okay, good point. Yes, the trees are the open slope. Questionable, it's not as steep as it looks. It's pretty flat. So if you're going to be crazy enough to go to Cloudy Pass, yeah, that's okay.
But the other side of Cloudy Pass is much steeper.
Yeah. But look here, boy, wouldn't this be fun to ski? Open timber? Yeah. Come up this ridge and ski down here? No. You've got all kinds of avalanche problems here. Plus, you can have little local 20-footers in here that will cause problems. Actually, these trees, as much as it looks dense, they're pretty large trees. It's actually fun. That's pretty open timber. What about here? Very good. It's very open, it's very sparse vegetation, but it's flat, it's on top of the ridge, it's safe. The other thing to take note of here are the wing marks in the snow. See if you can figure out which way the wind is blowing. You can't really tell from the slide, but you'd have to be there to see it. But same thing. What about here?
That's okay. That's a high country over east of London.
Yeah, we're going into Upper London Lakes, Spider Pass. Okay, this is good terrain. It's flat enough. The thing you have to be careful of is little pitches like this that if you have unstable weather, it could bury you. Something, you could be skiing the bottom down here and just it could fall on you. So these are little terrain traps. These are the subtle things that can get you. You know, obviously this Spider Pass is big. You want to be very careful about what you do with that thing. Probably not go there. Here's the snout of Lyman Glacier. This little band of right here. This is a little closer to the snout just for fun scenery. There's an arch in the glacier. The glacier and rock. It's kind of pretty. Around Lyman again. Cloudy Pass. This is that area that was mentioned. Mentioned might be dangerous because it's out of the trees. Well, you can see it's pretty flat. But even if you have any questions about it, the way to cross it is, look how far the distance there is between the people. The person's out there skiing. I'm standing back here with the camera. If anything happens, I can see it. It doesn't take both of us. I could go to that person's aid if that was a bad spot. But that's a pretty safe spot because it's so flat. It doesn't have any vegetation, no anchors, no tether underneath. That's very slick. But it's so flat. So flat is not very fun to ski, as a matter of fact. So you come over here into the avalanche danger. Carve your telemarks. So you hear the telemark turns, and that's more of a terrain trap. And here's a real good one right here. This little bowl right in here is a good place to get caught. This is on top of Cloudy Pass, and we have some classic chutes in here. Just some scenery up there. The other side of Cloudy Pass, Glacier Peak. Again, you want to stay away from this cliff, although there is some places to get down here. The trick here is you want to stay in the timber to stay away from all this, but there are cliffs down lower. What is the problem? Okay, here's exactly, in fact, this is what I thought of to make this drawing that we were just talking about. This is exactly what happens. Here's a starting zone, right here. Here's your track. Here's an accumulation, or a runout zone, except if you get enough snow, you get a deposit there, it keeps going, starts this thing, and this runs down into the Agnes. Same thing. And then from there, you're on to other exciting adventures to Skowhegan, which will end at the top of Rail Creek Valley. yes, could be. Or 3 years, well not 3 years, I mean, you know, several years ago there were a lot of people who had done a lot of mountain work in the village, and there were three separate parties that did Cloudy Pass and day trip. I wouldn't recommend it. You should go prepared for the night.
Several nights,
because if you get snowed on while you're at Lyman, you're not going to want to come back across Crown Point. that's a very serious situation. Okay, any questions? I want a quick, can we have some more lights? And if I can get your attention over here on the things that are hung up, I can finish this up pretty quick. Way of review, things to look for in terrain. We've talked about where you are situated in relation to the avalanche path. It's different to be down here than here in the starting zone. In relation to your weather too. What sort of slope it is? Is it a straight slope? Is it concave or is it convex? Convex is by far the worst, although if you have something that's open and straight, that's bad also. But this is where you'll find a lot of starting zones, even in open timber, is in this convex thing. If you are dealing with small terrain traps, it can be bad to be here because you can undercut the support of the snow and cause it to slide also. If you're on flat ground, of course, be at a ridge top or here, that's the best in terms of the terrain. The slope. Most common avalanche slope is 30 to 45 degrees. It can happen within 25 to 55 degrees. 25 degrees is not very steep. Orientation to the sun. We talked about that out in the snow, and I just wanted to mention it again. If you have a south exposure, in our case here, that would be anything over on the Martin Ridge side. You have more problems with that if you have a sudden warming spell. The sun comes out all of a sudden. You know, you've had cold weather, the sun comes out. Your greatest avalanche danger is going to be on the south side. If you're in a long cold spell, The danger is obvious on the south side, okay, because of the sun and the melting and the water. Is that obvious to everybody? Okay, the danger will be greater on the north side if you have a continued cold spell, snow and cold, because it will not stabilize very fast. The cold temperatures slow down the stabilizing of the snow. If you have sub-zero temperatures following a snowstorm, that snowstorm is not going to stabilize very fast. It will be unstable until you get warmer temperatures. If you have temperatures in the 20s, a snowstorm can stabilize in 24 hours. Orientation to the wind is another major, major point. Our major winds come down valley, but you can often see wind marks in the snow as you dealing with it. If the snow looks like the wind has scoured it, in other words, the wind has really, carved in, you can see wind carved marks. You people from Minnesota know all about wind carving. I saw some of the best wind carving I've ever seen on Christmas vacation in southern Minnesota. Okay, if the slope is wind scoured, it's going to be fairly safe. That snow has been pounded on, it's been thinned out, it's stable. So if you're on the side of a hill that's been wind scoured, that's a fairly safe place to be. The top of the ridge. Although, as long as you've got snow around on the hillside, it can always do some strategy. So it's only moderately safe. If you're in the valley bottom or top of a ridge where you don't have the slope, that's the safest. But if you're on a ridge on the downwind side or the lee side of a slope, that's very dangerous. On a big mountain, we're talking about these fancy cornices. But we can also change the scale on this. This does not have to be thousands of feet. This can be just 20 feet. And the same thing's true. You can get a wind slab forming here. And that's the kind of thing that can fracture and cause you problems. So this is very dangerous on this side. And then once you get away from that, out here again, you're safe. But being right below this again would be kind of dangerous.
Yeah. A place in the village or around here that is almost exactly like that is the east end of the tails as you go down, because you would come down valley. It's often get wind deposits. You can see it on the top, the wind piles up at the top, and then according to that chart, that's almost exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. That reminded me when you said around the village. remember the slide where I gave Diana a hard time for standing there on the road with the ice fall above her? A similar situation that we have here in the village. There's no road or river underneath, but a place to avoid is the lower road's the lower diversion. It goes right across the top of Cotton Falls. Very few anchors. You're in a starting zone. You go right over Copper Falls. Well, 100 feet deep. Benham's. Another local trap.
There's a big ravine right before the falls, too.
That's a steep wall. That's what I'm talking about. That ravine. Crossing the head of that ravine. I did that one time. No, settle down right there. Dumbest thing I've ever done. Lucky to be alive. But the. You're right about the tailings. Not only being in the starting zone of the tailings, but right underneath where you can undercut tailings, especially in weather like this. Okay, what I have here, well, one other set of, again, that's mine. I think I've covered it. We've talked about vegetation and anchors. And bowls, big bowls are dangerous. If you have terraces, benches, watch out for that. They offer flat places that can be safe, but they offer micro starting zones too, or places where you could be down in the bottom like here and undercut this and get buried in a ravine. It can be tricky. Can you think of anything else on terrain traps or terrain in general? Anybody else can have any questions or anything?
Not a question, just a comment. I guess the thought that came to me all the time was if someone was out doing some of these where there were the dangers and so on and they were being careful and thinking, but they almost have to be prepared to be their own rescue team.
If you're out on a long
trip. Yeah, just because they don't get caught by an avalanche doesn't mean that you can't have an accident. And then to think of a rescue team having to try to reach that area and all these things, so you almost have to be prepared to.
You have just led into switching in discussion there. Diane's going to talk just right about that. I have one other thing I'd like to hand out. I don't know when we're going to get to it. I was supposed to do this before Diane came up, but what we have here, I'm just going to hand it out. I'm not going to go over it. This is a hazard evaluation summary. It's out of this book. It's page 127. It takes about everything we've talked about with both snow observations and terrain observations and puts it together for you on one sheet of paper to consider. We got enough for everybody in this room. I really suggest that you look this over. If it doesn't make sense, read the chapter in here on it. It's only a few pages long. It's not a very tough chapter. This is really worth your while. This is probably the most important thing in the book. This right here. My 30 seconds is up. There are some indications that aren't on this list that mean danger regardless of your terrain. And those, we've mentioned them here and there. I'm going to put them together right now for you in one place. And those are evidence of avalanche activity on slopes of similar orientation. If you see settling and fracturing of the snow, we talked about that. Anytime you see that under your skis, regardless of your setting, you're in trouble. That's high avalanche danger. New snow, 6 inches or more in 24 hours period, and shortly for 24 hours afterwards. High winds during the snowstorm or blowing snow, wind slabs. Sudden warming trend. Or if you do the shovel test like we demonstrated there and you have an easy shovel test, you got avalanche problems. Those are guaranteed. You don't have to go any further on this to say you have avalanche danger. But if you don't have that, you still might have it, you can go through this. So. Thank you very much. Your turn.
Do you need a break?
No.
I'm going to sit down, because I've been creating avalanches all morning. It's wet. Yeah. I
I wasn't in for almost anything that Ken said, so if I repeat stuff, just sort of go. Or if I'm covering the same thing, I don't think we will. At this point, I hope that Ken has gotten you to the point that you can recognize a potential slope. You know to stay out of starting zones, and you know to get down in the safe run out of, beyond run out of the bottom. But we all know that we don't do that. I didn't think Ken took those pictures. It is a calculated risk, and you're inevitably, unless you just go from here to the ballpark, you're at some point probably going to get into that situation where you recognize that there is a potential danger, but you really don't have any other way to get there. You know, if you have to descend 2,000 feet and then climb 2,000 feet back up, you know, the last 2 hours before daylight, you're not going to do it. We're reasonably human, and we just don't do that kind of thing. So you've hopefully done all of the correct things up until this point. This is still talking to you as a skier, not you as a rescue team, although certainly there are things to keep in mind, you know, in both situations. If you've come to that slope that you're going to cross, hopefully it's not going to be as big as the one where Ken had the picture of the other person way out in front and he was standing there with the camera, because that's a pretty big slope, but you got to do it, you got to do it. First thing you want to do is just take a good look at it, obviously noting the avalanche and the snow, but also noting other things about the terrain. How much danger is there? Can you minimize it by simply getting higher? And also, if it catches you, where is it going to put you? Is it just going to put you down in a big flat bottom of a basin, or is it going to put you over a cliff, or is it going to smash you into great big rocks? You may not have any choice about those things, but they may trigger something that says, you know, if it's just a big flat run out, well, you know, if you're 6 feet under, you're 6 feet under. It doesn't matter where you're 6 feet under. But if it's going to be over a cliff, obviously the hazard is that much more increased. The other thing you want to look at on those slopes is any kinds of islands of safety, if there are rocks or trees that you might be able to get to in a hurry, someplace that might give you a little bit of protection. Now, you know, little trees aren't going to do much good. Big trees may not do any good, but they're better than nothing. If you can hide behind some of those things, get on the downhill side of them. In most cases, you're probably not going to be able to out-ski it, either straight down the hill or even off to the side. By the time you hear it, realize what's happening, you know, do a couple other things I'm going to mention, you're not going to have time to get anywhere very fast. But if you do, there's a great story. I was at an avalanche seminar last winter in British Columbia. There's a story of some climbers. Most people buried by avalanches are climbers, not skiers or snowmobilers or hikers. So for you climbers, you can remember that. But there were some climbers, I don't even remember where they were now. But they had been camped on a big snowfield. And one guy had gotten up in the morning, gone out of the tent to take a leak. And during the time that he was out of the tent, a big slide came down on their camp area. Well, the people that were still in the tent were in a little less impacted area. So they were able to get out with no problem. But they knew this guy had gone out in the morning, and they didn't know where he'd gone. Now, obviously, they couldn't follow his track. So they, you know, did their appropriate procedures, which we'll get into in a minute. Couldn't find him. Finally, I think they did finally go for help. When he was finally discovered, I'll skip a little bit of the story, but when he was finally discovered, he had been standing below a big rock, like 20 feet high. He was just right beneath it. And it wasn't an overhanging rock, but when the snow came down, it just kind of went around this rock and left a little pocket underneath. And even though it was covered over, you know, he was moving around within this space. And he started to dig a little bit, but obviously wasn't going to get, you know, there's probably 6 feet of snow on top of him. But that rock face, it was a big rock, so obviously it was a lot of protection. And little rocks are better than no protection at all. Little trees are better than, you know, no trees at all. So remember to look for those islands. Remember where you, as you cross it, remember where they are. It's real easy to just start looking at that track in front of you or your destination across the slope and not be looking around and remember where you are in the middle of it. It may be that it's closer to go that way than that way, but how are you going to get that way? Are you going to be able to turn around? Maybe you can ski fast enough and well enough to, you know, skirt around and back, but that's somewhat unlikely. Other couple things, if you've heard this, you know, bear with me, but I think it bears repeating. When you get ready to cross it, you basically want to get rid of all the loose things and tighten up all the things that you're going to keep with you. In other words, you're going to zip up all your zippers and button all your buttons and Velcro all your Velcros, pull your hat down, pull your cuffs down, pull your mittens up, tighten everything down so that if you were getting ready to be buried, you would be a little more comfortable. Now, you're not going to be comfortable. If you have a hood on your jacket, pull it up. It'll keep snow from going down your back. If you have a balaclava, you might want to pull that down. So tighten up all the clothes that you've got on. The other thing you want to do is get rid of any of the excess stuff that you won't have. Get your hands out of the straps of your poles. Now if you drop one and it goes skating down the slope, you're out of luck, but hold on to it. But if you keep your hands in your straps and you get caught, that's just that much more leverage that you're going to get jerked around with. You want to have your pack so that it's easily jettisoned. Now, there are people that say, you know, undo one shoulder strap, so you've just got one shoulder strap left on. Well, it depends on your pack. If that throws you off balance, you're better off keeping both of them on. But certainly loosen a waist belt, if you have a backpack particularly, or even some of the little day packs have a waist belt. The other thing is the skis are also going to capture you and pull you around. If you have any means of loosening cables or loosening bindings, you might consider it. Now that's going to be a real individual decision. I don't think most skis have any way of doing that very easily so that you're not going to come out of them. Some of the heavier duty mountaineering type skis do have sort of a safety release. It's something to think about if your ski gets caught rather than trying to keep it on. If you feel your ski getting pulled off, let it go. I mean, it's going to make it harder to get out in the end, but if you're alive, you'll have a better chance of getting out. So get rid of all the loose stuff. You want to cross one at a time, like Ken was saying, a lot of space between you, and not 10 or 15 feet. Most slides are, I mean, most of the if you're thinking that hard about it, you're probably going to be in an area that's going to be bigger than 10 or 15 feet. Wait until one person gets all the way across the slope. Now, in that picture of Ken's, that probably wasn't very practical. That you have to decide how far apart you want to be. But the best way is to cross simply one at a time, all the way across. The first person across may not necessarily be in the most dangerous position, but everybody's going to be watching him from essentially the same place. Once the first person gets across, then that person should turn around and watch everybody else going across. Everybody should be watching the person crossing the slope. There is a story in the book about somebody who was crossing a known slope but had looked away while the slide came and he hadn't any idea where to look for the people that had been buried. So keep your eyes on that individual. If you're the last person in line and you got 10 people, it gets real old standing there watching everybody go across the slope. You know, and you'd really kind of rather just turn around and look at the scenery, but it may be a matter of finding them in the end or not. So keep an eye on them. The first person across should think about the abilities of everybody else. I don't know whether you talked about skiing down fall lines. In most cases, you're crossing slopes. Trails don't generally go straight up or straight down. And yet, really, that's the safest place to ski. You're not cutting the slope. You're just following, you know, if a snowball would fall, where it would go down. In most cases, we can't ski that steep a slope. You're better off to angle down than to go straight across. But again, that, you know, if it's going to take you down into a chasm or down the elevation that you're not going to be able to get back up, it may not be practical. The first person across should keep in mind the abilities of everybody else and make sure that it's a place that they can all ski, you know, reasonably safely. Everybody should try to stay in that same track. Now, it might seem that that would sort of cut it down a little bit farther and loosen things up, but in most cases, once the track is there, that a little bit of disturbance is better than lots of disturbance. And that sort of follows with, you know, try not to fall down. And again, that's something the first person has to keep in mind. Make it someplace that people can do without falling down. Just because that vibration or that disturbance might be what it takes to set off the next little slide. Don't stop in the middle of it. That seems fairly obvious. Don't stomp around. If you do fall down, you know, don't worry when you get back up about brushing off and, you know, cleaning everything off. Just keep going. You should do it as quickly as you can, as safely as you can. You know, somewhere there's a balance between those two things. I think that's about it. Just probably the most important thing is to have everybody watching that individual. The leader of the group might want to also keep an eye up above, particularly if it's a very long, easily visible slope. Sometimes you can see it happening, And you maybe even want to work out some kind of code where you yell slide, and that person knows that they better do whatever they can do to get out of that area. That's pretty extreme. Hopefully you're not going to be in those kinds of situations. If you are caught, or if somebody else is caught, I guess I can only talk to you, I can't talk to anybody else. If you're at the edge, go for it. Just try to, you know, it may take almost like a little jog to the edge. Get off into the trees or behind the rocks, whatever you can take. Like I say, in most cases, you're not going to be able to do that. Try to throw off any of the excess equipment. If you're that close to the edge, you might want to keep your poles. But if you know you're, if it's obvious that you're going to be swept away, you know, get rid of everything you can get rid of. It's a lot easier to get rid of a pack while you're standing up and, you know, reasonably free motion than it is once you've started to get sort of jostled around by the snow. The biggest thing that's in all the literature is use swimming motions. Obviously, you can't do that with poles in your hands anyway. But just something that sort of keeps you up on top of the book. And there's some really good first-person accounts in the book of people that have been caught. And it's been probably the most vivid description is likened to being in really heavy surf, where you just, you know, you're moving around and you know that the air is up there and the bottom's down below you, but you really can't force yourself to go where you want to go. Those swimming motions will keep you a little bit closer to the top. There's a story, I think it's in this one, of a guy that was being tumbled down. He was a trained snow observer, so he has all these very, you know, finite, great observations. But he remembers as he's being tumbled down, feeling the ground under his feet. And he'd push up on the ground, and it would kind of bob him up to the top, and he'd swim for a little while, and he'd gradually sink, and then he'd feel the ground again, and he'd push up with his legs and get bumped back up to the top. So if you feel anything solid, push away from it. Hopefully it's going to be sending you up. The other thing that's real hard, that I know there's a story in here about, keeping your mouth closed. One thing you're going to be doing is gasping for air if there's all the snow in front of your face. But if you take a great big breath and all you've got is powder in front of you, you're going to suck in a great big mouthful of snow. Now obviously if you know you're near the surface, I mean, you've got to breathe. You're probably going to be screaming anyway, but just remember that you can get a glob of snow in your mouth that's going to block your airway. Now, hopefully, eventually, it would melt out. You'd be able to spit it out. But if it's been a while that you've been under that, that may not be real practical. So at least think about keeping your mouth closed. As you begin to feel things slowing down, and it seems as if, I've never been caught in one quite this big, but it seems as if you can tell when, you know, the motion is starting to let up a little bit. Again, push up from the bottom, even if you're not on solid ground. Just give your legs a shove. You might hit a hard block of snow and it would be able to push you up a little bit. The other thing you want to do is try to make yourself an air pocket. The snow is real permeable. Obviously, if you sleep in snow caves or igloos or whatever, you know, there's air passing through the snow. But if you've got a little bit extra space in front of you, it's just going to be that much easier to breathe. You can just put your hand in front of your face, kind of make a little pocket. Presumably you have mittens on. Make a little pocket like that. Some people say put your arm like this, and you've got this extra little space here. Kind of put your head down. If you're going to be stuck this way for, you know, any length of time, it's going to be a little more uncomfortable. But if you're able to breathe better, you know, maybe it's worth it. The other thing you want to do is try to stick your hand up. Just try to get one arm some other place than where your head is. That may be all that your rescuers are going to see, is that hand sticking up out of the snow, or maybe a fingertip sticking up out of the snow. You may not know which way is up, in which case it doesn't really do any good to stick your arm down, but it's better than not trying. And that's the only thing you can do is try. So, like I say, keep pushing up, make an air pocket, and stick your hand up. And all the rest of the stuff is, a whole lot easier said than done. Don't panic. Obviously, if you're completely buried, you're not going to be able to move or whatever. But ask yourself those two questions. And, you know, do things better the next time. Although, like I say, it may or may not make much difference. I think it went real well. You obviously found Little Joe and Little Joe's pack. A lot sooner than they did last year. I should have buried a mitten shell this year. It was a real challenge. I didn't get my mitten shell back till spring last year.
Until the snow melted.
But I think practice on the probe line and, you know, going over your pre-planning would help a lot. And it's real easy to think avalanche right now. You know, you can hear them all around and it's real apparent, but don't forget about it when it gets, you know, sunny and warm and it seems like it's been stable for a while. especially later in the spring. It's something to keep in mind until the snow's all gone, and then you can think about it in a different situation.
One of the most dangerous times for avalanches is when it's warmer, when the snowpack is, the entire snowpack is at 32 degrees.
When the temperature during the day and during the night has been above 32 degrees for the first time for a couple of 24-hour periods, watch out.
Things are going to come crashing. And it's going to feel, you're going to forget about winter, you're going to have cabin fever, and you're ready for spring, and you want to put all this avalanche stuff out of your mind. Think about flowers and grass. Watch out.
Water melts on top and seeps down, and then
the temperature the temperature doesn't have to be carried by the water. The temperature itself just start moving through the whole path.
It's just at 32 degrees, there's not much bonding between anything. There's not much in the way of crystals left anyway.
It's all very heavy and stuff in it.
Lots and lots of little ball bearings.
It's very heavy snow. It can fall, although it doesn't fall as fast because it's wet. But it can still cause problems. A lot of that.
So in other words, the first 48 hours after the first warm spring thaw, we feel pretty good. Is that what you're saying?
Make it a little longer than that, but yeah. A couple of, several days. Warm, especially warm overnight, because you're used to it getting up to 32 or 35 in the daytime, but it still goes down to 20 at night. That's going to heat that snow. I mean, the snow underneath is still going to be fairly cold.
That information is available too. Part of the weather avalanche, this information that's radioed out every day includes minimum, maximum temperatures over a 24-hour period, 24-hour accumulations, and some other things. But that weather, that information is available.
Who takes the weather normally?
Greg.
The high school, yeah. The high school teacher of the high school.
Well, he ought to be aware of that so that he can
spot it,
point it out.
Bob Gracious, who was here with us today, keeps the information in the radio, where the radios are.
But he's not here now, so
he's definitely
One thing we pushed last year, we got a little bit of it going last year, and it hasn't picked up this year, but from your point of view, I would push again, is that all this time, every day, you're radioing out information that goes down to the Forest Service office and then gets telephoned over to who's ever accumulating all this information. And they're putting this information together into a statewide forecast. And there's no reason, especially since you're doing them a favor, providing them with all this free labor to take the information, that they can't give you at least yesterday's forecast back in return when you radio that information out every morning. And you're not getting it, and I would kind of sit on them and start screaming. Say, okay, fine. Give us some feedback. We need your help. This, that type of information is available. And it's available on, a statewide tape. I got the number out and called it before I left, but I think I got the old number that said it was disconnected. But that system is existing. That's what that information is being communicated.
The one thing about that is even if it's a 24-hour old forecast, you can compare that to what you think has been going on. And it's not going to be that site-specific, and it talks about east side of the Cascades and west side of the Cascades, we're in kind of a funny place right here because it's sort of close, and yet,
And usually their forecast does cover a storm that they know is around for several days, so it can be because they bring in the weather forecast too. My other big concern. I'm glad there aren't too many people around this time talking about it, is all that we've talked about in terms of rescue and stuff is geared for the skier. And I think you need to put out your plan geared for a snowcat. A more multiple injury, multiple people involved, because that's your other, in fact, I think that's your biggest hazard, is that snowcat. Or crews working down the road. Those stiff probes, which are tough to carry on a pair of skis, would be a real blessing in a hard snowpack on that road. You can just lash them onto the snowcat and go with it, or a thiacol or something and go with them. But you don't want them to get buried. No, they should stay here. Or maybe they should stay in a cache. further down the road. I don't know. Whatever. But I think that's something people haven't addressed. When we've talked avalanches, it's always been the skier. And I think we're getting set up.
Now, the advantages would be that you're going to look for a whole lot of, or a whole load of people in one place. And that thing's probably going to be fairly easy to find.
It's not as likely to get buried.
It's not as likely to be totally buried. And yet you're still going to have to think about, you know, the evacuation part of it. And, you know, presuming you have another vehicle, you're going to be coming, probably coming this direction. You know, and then what do you do?
The other thing that's got going for it is if you're inside that snow cat, your chances are better. You can get bigger air pockets. One thing the drivers might think about, if they're sobbing to the avalanche danger being high through there, like it is now, is when they get there, I know they like to keep that air vent open because the fumes are awful in those things. If they got it wide open, I'd shut it down a little bit, just leave a crack instead of leaving it wide open because that snow couldn't get in if they did get caught.
I don't know the stability of those as far as the construction even. I had always imagined, though, that a large avalanche would actually crush the top down, wouldn't it? Or are those able to sustain the force of an avalanche? You mentioned a safer inside because you'd have the air pockets, but wouldn't the roof actually go in if it was a large one?
Not necessarily. They've had some accidents on Stevens Pass with via cars, which are not as built like those things are.
Yeah.
And they haven't been crushed.
We still have luggage racks on top of them too.
Yeah, those things are pretty solid.
Yeah, they are.
Probably the biggest danger, I mean, if you literally went rolling down the cliff, would just be, you know, bouncing around inside.
Yeah.
But that's still not going to be nearly as bad as getting bounced around outside. And, you know, the guys that are doing it now are, I think, pretty aware of it. You know, having somebody stand back and watch, and somebody else digging or whatever. They may need a reminder now and then too. Do you all have any other questions or comments? Or, do you want to talk to each other?
Well, I want to say thank you to both of you for being here and for sharing all of your knowledge with us. And also thanks to everybody else who came and spent their whole day Saturday thinking about avalanches.
Yes.
Learned all of the stuff.
And I swear by next year I'll have videotapes. I know I will. University of Washington, I think, has some videos. It's one of those things that I didn't get to.
If you really want to thrill yourself, and I don't know where it is. there's a movie. And do you have any information where they could probably start looking for it? There's a movie that...
All Four Servants.
We call it the Disney movie. I don't think it is. But it's a movie that actually has footage of avalanches. And the key piece in it is the Disney slide. And what it involves is the guy from Walt Disney was in Colorado filming some of these slides when they were shooting them down. And the avalanche was, you know, over here on this side of the valley. And to be safe, they stationed themselves up on the other side of the valley, on the other side of the highway. And this guy was standing behind his camera, and they shot their cannons up and sent this avalanche down. Well, the thing was a climax avalanche. They set more loose than they ever dreamt possible. The thing crossed the road. The guy was so intense in his camera that he never got out of the way. And he got buried. So the film runs until the...
It's all right.
Until it goes up, until it's a pretty spectacular piece of footage. He died for it. But it gives you the feeling of what it might be like to get caught.
The force involved is pretty, and even some of the pictures in the book. You know, if you just sort of take a close look at the size of the people and the size of the slides, and sizes of trees that get snapped off and that sort of thing, it can be impressive.
It's pretty awesome. Thomas Witt was saying that what impressed him most about that film was something that I think the trap we all fall into is that, well, avalanches are something that they read about in books, but it can't happen to me, especially if I'm in a safe place.